Kura is in the proper mood for going on pilgrimage. In other words, he's in the proper mood for going to Vrindavan because he is going to see Krishna. He is full of anticipation. Without anticipation, without desiring something that we lack, the chemistry doesn't work for anything to happen on the spiritual level. Krishna's mercy is unlimited, but still our part is to somehow cultivate the desire. And what desire should we cultivate? We have to cultivate our spiritual desires. And Ushilam means the process of cultivation, Krishna and Ushilam. So what is the desire we're supposed to cultivate? Very much to do with service. It's to do with service. Devotional service, not just work, but service is an offering, seva. So his desire is very strong to be in the company of Krishna, to actually have the fortune of seeing Krishna and offering his obeisances in the dust of Krishna's feet. He knows who Krishna is, and he's amazed that this opportunity has come to him to see Krishna through the most unlikely source, and that's Kamsa. And it is Krishna who is worshipped by all the demigods, and yet his feet are worshipped, but yet he's wandering around the pasturing grounds, herding the cows, and he will see his feet, and then he will see his face, and then he describes his Krishna's face, framed by his curly hair, beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. I'm going to see the supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty. What does that mean? The reservoir of all beauty. We call Krishna Govinda the reservoir of all pleasure. What does it mean to be the reservoir of all beauty? The source. But if we think of it in a little bit more expanded conceptual terms, it will help us too, because because you can think of something being the source of something else, and it's just coming. Just like we can say that the electric wire is the source of the electric power. But we don't get a sense, if we think only in that way, that the sum total of all beauty or of all electricity is possessed by that source. So reservoir is a bit bigger of a concept, that all of beauty, Krishna possesses all beauty. So what does that mean? Or try to consider how attractive all beauty is. And we think that the beautiful personages in this possess just the smallest drop of the reservoir of all beauty. So how beautiful is Krishna, and therefore how attractive is Krishna. And it's no wonder that he's charmed everyone. Everyone in Braja completely charmed by Krishna. So he's going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This is what Akura is saying. I'm going to see Adya Apyadya Vishnu Manujatvam Isho. Today, on this very day, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Manujatvam, the form of a human being, Ayusham, he's assumed the form of a human being. That's how he's describing it. Mara Avataraya, he's diminishing the burden of the earth, Bhuva, Nijichaya. By his own desire, he's done this. Lavanya Dhamma, he is the abode of beauty. So, think of it like that. He's the abode of beauty. What does abode mean? The dwelling place. So all beauty dwells in him. So think of what that means. That something is attractive in this world, or someone is attractive, due to its beauty. And all beauty rests in Krishna. And he's speaking, I'm going to see this Krishna. Lavanya Dhamna, the abode of all beauty. Lavita, Upalambanam, Mayam, Nanashyat, Phalam Anjasa Drisha. There is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. So this is, again, this is what the gopis said also with Akshanvantam Phalamidam Naparam Naparam Vidama. There is no greater goal for the eyes than to see the form of all beauty, because the eyes naturally wish, they long for their object, and there is an interaction between the eyes and the object of the sense of the eyes, which is form. So Krishna's form is perfect, perfectly pleasing to the eyes. But yet when Kamsa saw Krishna, what did he see? It's the death. The wrestler saw him as a thunderbolt. So, again, one is seeing Krishna with one's consciousness, with one's, according to one's mental state, one sees in one way or another. But Akura is expecting to see the perfection of all beauty and the abode of all beauty. There's no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of existence. And that Supreme Lord, who is unlimitedly beautiful, the reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will, he's assumed a human-like form to be the earth of a Brahma. Why is he saying that? That by his own sweet will, he's assumed a human-like form. Implies, what does that imply? Of course, that he has other forms.
What does that? He wasn't forced to come.
He wasn't forced to come. He's coming by his sweet will to be the earth, and that's true. Because the Brahma prayed to the Lord to become an avatar, to cross downward to this realm from this, because of the overburden. Yada, yada, yadamasya. So he's perceiving the Supreme Lord as Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu, and he's assumed this true form in this incarnation. So he's seeing him as Vishnu, because he's a devotee basically of Lord Vishnu. He's coming from a different platform of devotion. This is what Vishnu talked about in that quote. So, might want to object, because he's talking about how fortunate he's going to be. Even demons, when they object, why are you saying you're so fortunate? Even demons get Krishna's darshan. What kind of demon got Krishna's darshan? Bakasura, Keshi, Aristasura, Putana. So why are you thinking yourself so fortunate? Why do you praise your own good fortune in this manner? Now Vishnu, who is extraordinarily beautiful, whose extraordinary beauty I'm realizing in my heart, has appeared by his sweet will within our own dynasty of Vaiswatamanu. The demons may see him, but they do not perceive his sweetness. Will my eyes not become successful today? Certainly they will. So many subtle points also come out in this comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Those of demonic mentality, or even those of the neutral mentality, they don't see the Lord, but they don't actually see him, because again, one doesn't see with one's eyes, one sees with one's consciousness, and according to one's consciousness, one perceives the Lord differently. So Vaisa, he is the reservoir of all rasa. He, all relationships exist in him. But also, this is his own consciousness, because Krishna is unlimited. So he's going to see Vishnu form, because that's his worshipable deity, that's his consciousness. So this is exalted consciousness. But he doesn't see Krishna the same way that the residents of Vrindavan see Krishna. They see him as the really as the reservoir of all beauty. And according to how one sees Krishna, Krishna reveals, Krishna reveals by his mercy as much of his beauty as our consciousness can hold, we can say. So the demons have very contracted, inimical consciousness, and they don't perceive the beauty of Krishna, but they perceive other aspects of him. They perceive that he is in fact death personified, because Krishna is in fact death personified. He enforces this rule, this unbreakable law in this world, that everything born must die. So he is the enforcer of that. So that is an aspect of him. He's like a thunderbolt. Where does the thunderbolt get its shocking power from? It causes fear. We may think ourselves very secure, and if we're outside of something and there's a thunderbolt, suddenly we become like into a mouse. This is what we are, because it is Krishna who's giving that potency, and his power and his partially localized power as Paramatma, he is that too. This is the absolute truth. This is, in the words of the Bhagavatam, this is Advaya Gyan. This is non-dual. The absolute truth is non-dual substance. And he's perceived differently according to the mode of worship. So, Brahmeti, Paramatmekti, Bhagavanti, Sabhite. So there are three levels, basic levels of realizing this one absolute truth. It's not that three absolute truths or infinite absolute truths. But everyone is perceiving the absolute truth differently according to his consciousness. So the materialist perceives the Lord as death itself. Krishna is reciprocating with the consciousness that the living entity possesses. So this is the one absolute truth whose existence is everywhere and is perceived in basically three different ways. So by the jnanis, who have he reveals himself, the one absolute truth, reveals himself as the non-dual Brahman, whose potency is everywhere, and everything in existence is him, the oneness of all. And the yogis perceive that same absolute truth in a more localized way. What does localized mean?
In the heart.
Yeah, okay. But because Brahman has this quality, this, and it's everywhere. And when one perceives Paramatma, he perceives that he's everywhere, but he's everywhere, he's in a localized way, in with qualities. He's there in the heart, but he's also there in the atoms, and he's there between every atom, within every atom. So that means he's also all-pervading. But he's there in a localized way, in a as an individual, in an individual form, not in a formless, not in a formless fashion like is Brahman. But in that localized form, the yogis don't perceive his personality exactly. They perceive his qualities. And you can, and one can actually classify different spiritual paths or religious paths in these three ways. And because people who are religious, which are certainly better than the people who are non-religious or atheistical, they will perceive the Lord in one of these three ways. And in the beginning, if you look at what they're saying, it appears always it all appears the same. But then when you read a little further, and you see that they think that God is either everything in existence in an equal way. He's as much as the breeze and the clouds, and I am also ultimately one with him. So there's so many different paths that speak like this. And then there's the ones who see his mercy and his other qualities, but they don't know anything about his personality, except they're a little afraid of him, because he can fix you really good, like no one else can fix you. Personality, the actual nature, his actual personality, that is a very, very secret and special thing. People just perceive that. An example that I find myself always giving is that of the king. Most citizens, what is their relationship with the king? Most of them just see him in relationship to the government, the power that he is. And then there's others who get to go to the court. And actually in the Vedic times, not even the Vedic times, but the pre-modern times when some very good kings were ruling in the land of Bhat, of India, they used to have some of them had a rope that went out to the court, to the center of town, that went right into their bar, their court where they would hold court, and there was a rope tied to a bell or something. I don't think it was tied to the king's leg or anything. But if anyone had a complaint or a problem, they had to write any of the citizens, they would pull the rope and they would get the attention of the king. In my kingdom, there's a problem, and it was his responsibility to solve it. So you went and saw the power when you had difficulty. And you saw him, the person, the power, but in his localized form as the king. And there was one king who had a golden rope like that. So what is that saying? How long does golden rope last anywhere nowadays? What is that saying? I'm the king, I'm the power. You touch this rope, it's for a particular purpose of service. You pull it, you get my attention. If you steal it, it's off to your head. You know, no one would consider doing that because they're dealing with the power. Localized power, though. So when you come to the king, you don't get his personality, you get it. But he's not impersonal. He has qualities. He listens to you. That means he can hear. He deals with your case. He judges. He's powerful. He's sitting up here and you're down here. You're reverential. You don't let your mobile phone go off and carry on a conversation with someone. That's why when we're in front of the deities, we don't have third party conversations. It's not proper because the worship, you don't talk to, you start talking to your friends. You don't take your camera and take pictures of your friends in front of the deities, because would you do that in front of the king, who's like that, who's so powerful? No, there's too much reverence, veneration. You don't do that because he might, because when you're in front of the king, when you're in front of the deities, all your attention must be on him. Otherwise, it's that's what we call it. But what? Let's think of it in terms of the king. What is it?
Disrespectful.
Disrespectful. Yes. So it's very dangerous to be disrespectful to the king. You can't say, "Well, it's just only the king," because he's not just sitting there. Only the king. It's the king. And he's got his guards and his ministers and lots of guards and his armies right there. And if he's disrespectful to him, it's very dangerous. Yet, how many of the citizens who have the opportunity who come before the king actually know what his personality is exactly, other than these particular qualities? What he likes to eat, what he, this kind of thing and that kind of a thing, the kind of sense of humor he has. Maybe he doesn't play musical instruments in court. What instruments does he like to play? If he likes to take care of cows, you'll never know it. It would be improper for you to view the king in his very private way, taking care of the cows, dressing the cows, hiding the cows, because that will interfere with your relationship with him as the king, because you'll think, well, he's just a coward boy. But actually, he has all the power of the king. His power doesn't diminish when he's a coward boy. It's just a different aspect of him, different aspect of his nature. So when he's sitting on the throne, he has the localized power that's of government that's pervading the kingdom. But when he's out playing and doing just what he wants to do and joking and laughing and everything, that very intimate behaviors, most people can't see that. They have to be very qualified to see that. So Krura, even though he's going to see Krishna in his own house, in his private quarters, with the cows, with his mother and father, with his friends playing, with a peacock feather on his head, still, his own qualification is to see him as Vishnu. Yet, the demons may see him, just like the good citizens, the law-abiding citizens see the king, they feel like they're seeking the father, their shelter, the most trusted persons. And indeed, it's called Prajapati, the protector of the praja, of the dependent citizens. But when the thieves see him, the criminals see him, and in this analogy, they're the demons opposed to the law and order of God. What happens when they see him? What are they thinking? Uh-oh, I've stolen. He's going to chop off my hand. I'm fearful. So so they don't actually see the same thing, the same king, get the same reassurance. They don't see their father, they see death, they see the punisher. It doesn't have anything to do with the king. He's not forcing them to see in that way. It's due to their consciousness. So he, Akura, being a devotee, a great devotee, knows that he will see the sweetness of the Lord, the powerful, localized sweetness of the Lord, and that is the perfection of the existence of his eyes. So when we ask ourselves, why can't I see Krishna, or I want to see Krishna, the Prabhupada answered, you can see him. This is how he would say it. You can see him in water. This is maybe our qualification. We can see him in the form of a deity. Before we can see Krishna in Vrindavan, let us first come have our consciousness proper when we see the deity of the Lord. To see, yes, here is Krishna. And actually, if our conscious, like what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Lord Jagannath, he saw him as Shyamasundar because of his consciousness. He saw him as so beautiful and he couldn't keep his eyes off of him. He was so fixed, he was staring at him continuously. And when he couldn't see him for 2 weeks at the time of, what is it called, Anusvara, after the Snanayatra festival, after Lord Jagannath is bathed, he becomes ill for 2 weeks and he's not seeing visitors for 2 weeks when they repent him for the Ratiyatra and repair, and he repairs in the painting. Because they use this kind of paints that aren't these plastic paints. They use very old-fashioned natural paints for this smearing. So when he couldn't see Lord Jagannath, the Mahaprabhu couldn't see Lord Jagannath for 2 weeks, he was completely disturbed with consciousness. He wouldn't even stay in Puri. He would go to Alaknath, where he could see the form of the Lord. Have you seen Alaknath? Have you seen the deity? So he was seeing in one consciousness that when he couldn't see, it was so disturbing. So that's how he was perceiving the deity of Lord Jagannath. So he continues. He is the witness more about him, because his consciousness. Because he's coming from outside of Braja. He doesn't quite have Braja consciousness, even though he knows Krishna. He is the witness of material cause and effect. Who is the witness? The super soul. And yet he is always free from false identification with them, with cause and effect, with the dealings of the material world. By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. So Vasya Chaham Desa Visto Mitmata Smitim Ganam Aponam Cha. The individual souls of this world who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy, that's again Mahavishnu, indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life, air, senses, and intelligence. So he's giving a logical argument that everyone, by his potency, we're all seeing and we're acting. Oh, and we're able to see by his potency, because in the consideration of how the eyes work, there are three factors. There's the four factors, really. there's the ultimate factor, which is Supreme Lord, and then there's Adi Devata, Adi Bhautika, and Adi Atmaka. There's the physical sense organ. There's the demigod Adi Devata, who controls the self, the sense organ. And then there's the third point, the sense object. So these three things have to be combined for an interdependent, because unless the demigod in charge of the sight is there. Who is the demigod in charge of sight? Is? But unless he's present, and unless the object is present, and unless the eye is present, the seeing doesn't see. The seeing doesn't take place. And then there's the one who is the resting place of all of those three, who gives the power and the energy, because when you have something that's organized, there always has to be an organizer upon whose energy it's resting. So he's the one who that is resting on. So indirectly we can perceive his existence in the activities of the life air, the senses, the intelligence, because my life air is by my consciousness and everything, I will hand, I want it to happen, hand, raise. So it seems like such a common everyday thing, you know, and I take it so much for granted, but if my life airs aren't working, I could, like, if we're sick, very, very sick, we become ill, we can't lift our finger, we can't do anything. So we take this for granted, thinking, oh, it's so simple, all I have to do is want to do it. I can practically do it unconsciously, I can just do what I want. But actually, it's a very, very intricate combination of the material energy. And let's think about it. How does the thought, because the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. So there's the thinking, and then there's the feeling is the desire, you know, some desire, not the word desire, but I want to lift this. This is an emotion, a need, or a desire comes in the mind, and then I think about it. And then I will it, means it's better, and it happens. So it's not so simple, because otherwise that is the mind, it starts with the mind. How does the mind connect with something physical? The mind is so subtle. So you have this very, very subtle interactions going on that we don't think about and we don't take for granted, but actually we can indirectly perceive something about the potency of the Lord when we look at it with a little bit of scrutiny. So he's talking about the Supasoul, who is the coordinator and the Pandita, the Anumanta, Bhakta Bhakta Maheshwara. He is the Mahaishwara. The Hizman Purushapura, he's within everyone's body as the Supasoul. So here is the purport. In this verse, a Kur establishes the all-powerful position of the Supreme Lord, who is about to see in Vrindavan. The false concept of the of separation from the Lord is described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, second chapter, 37th. Although all in existence emanates from the absolute truth, Krishna, we imagine a second thing, dhritya, bhayam. So this is the cause of the fear that we have, is because we see duality. Viparyato smriti means we see our intelligence is upside down. We see things inaccurately. We see ourselves as separate from the Supreme Lord. We see other items, because we want them for ourselves, we see them also as separate from the Supreme Lord. So, and that's inaccurate, because there is nothing, by definition, that can be separate from the Absolute Truth. So with this mentality, we try to exploit that second thing. for our sense gratification. Thus, the psychological underpinning of material life is the illusion that this world is somehow separate from God and therefore meant for our enjoyment. It is ironic that the impersonal philosophers, in their radical renunciation of this world, claim to be utterly false and totally separate from the Absolute. Unfortunately, this artificial attempt to divest this world of its divine nature, or in other words, its relation to God, does not lead people to utterly reject it, but rather to try and enjoy it. So that's an irony. And we don't see it as God's property, which is the Vaishnava viewpoint, that Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya, everything is His, so I can't renounce it, so because it's not mine to renounce. So the impersonalists who say it's not real, rather than acknowledging that it has everything in existence has a connection to God, indirectly cause people to want to enjoy it because they can't say it's not real. How are you going to live thinking the world isn't real? What are you going to do to eat? What are you going to do to... The world forces you to accept its reality whether you like it or not. If you say that step isn't real and you try to walk through without putting your foot up, what's going to happen? You bang your nose. So people have to, because they're not taught to see things in relationship to who things really belong to, and they can't see things as unreal or illusory. So the third alternative is what everyone does. Well, here it is, and here I am. So let's go. Well, it is true. So he's considered out as an irony. That indirectly it's impersonalism and the mood of the jnanis causes sense gratification, and the whole process is one of renunciation. Well, it is true that this world is temporary and thus in no sense illusory. The mechanism of illusion is a spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. Realizing this, we should immediately desist from any attempt to exploit this world, whether we should recognize it as God's energy. We will actually give up our material desires only when we understand that this world belongs to God and is therefore not meant for our sense gratification, selfish gratification. The word abhiyate here refers to a process of surmising the presence of the Lord through meditative introspection. This process is also described in the second canto of the Bhagavan Sarvabhuteshu Lakshita Swat Mahari Drishya Bud Yadivir Drasta Lakshana Anu Mapakai. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So, a famous verse with a long, long, long purport. So with the intelligence we can hypothesize, we can perceive that there is a God. The chorus states that the Lord is free from egoistic pride, afflicting ordinary embodied souls, as the Lord appears to be embodied like everyone else. And therefore, someone might object to the statement that he is free of egoism. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti comments on this puzzle as follows. How can we distinguish between being free of false ego and being afflicted by it? If a living entity is situated in a body, argues the objector, he will encounter the unhappiness and confusion that occurs within it. Just as a person living in a house, whether he's attached to it or not, cannot avoid experiencing the darkness, warmth, and cold that occurs within it. So he's setting forward. Someone may argue that, well, Krishna has an ego because he has a form. So, and to show that, and even if you see that he's realized in some way, how can you not be affected by your what goes on in your body, even if you are realized? Just like if you're in a house, if the house is cold, you feel cold. If the house is warm, you feel warm. So it does affect you. So that means you'd have an ego. So the answer, the objection is answered as follows. By his internal potency, the love dispels the darkness of ignorance along with the separateness and bewilderment it produces. So there is no Maya that causes Krishna to, that influences Krishna's experiences, because Krishna is Sambhavam Yatma Maya. He's working by his internal energy, his own potency. So we are tiny, and we come under the influence of Maya, and even though we are not our bodies, we have read it so many times, but still when our body feels cold, we feel cold. And when our body feels hungry, we feel hungry. And when our body feels tired, we feel tired. This connection, this inconceivable connection between spirit and soul and some material energy and gross material energy is done by the work of Krishna's Maya. Krishna's Maya doesn't act on Krishna. So there's no, because it's his energy. It's divinely inspired by him, but he is the controller of the energy. Anyway, this is what being described in about Kura's describing. Because he's seeking, after all, this is the potency of the person I'm going to see. He's so powerful. He's the witness of everything. He's controlling everything. He's a super soul in everyone's heart. And I'm going to see him. That's quite exciting. And he's described his beauty already. All sins are destroyed and all good fortune created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. And words that describe these three things, animate, beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like the decorations on a corpse. I'll read that again. It's quite wonderful. All sins are destroyed, and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities. What's the Sanskrit word for that? And his activities, lila, and appearances. And words that describe these three things, his appearances, that means his birth, jama karma, jami divyam, his qualities, and words that describe these things, they animate, they beautify and purify the world. They're so they give life to the world. The world is, all the things of this world, he compares them to bereft of his glories. They're like the decorations on a corpse. What does that mean? Has anyone ever seen a decorated corpse? Well,
I find it bizarre.
Doesn't make the corpse look beautiful, does it?
I try to, but it seems strange.
Yeah. When someone very close to you, to
not that close, but it's your friend.
Oh. So what is the decorations on the dead body make something beautiful? No matter how many decorations you put on a corpse, it's just because
at the end of the day you want to bury it or cremate it.
Huh?
At the end of the day you want to bury it or cremate it.
Because the thing, the source of the beauty, isn't the decorations, and it's not the body, it's the soul. So what's the analogy that's given here? It's because there's two parts of the verse. One is being compared to the decorations of a dead body. Does anyone remember? I'll read it again. all sins are destroyed and all good fortune created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. And words that describe these things animate, beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like decorations on a corpse. So we can, someone can say so many wonderful, sweet words, but they're just like decorations on something that's dead, unless they're words glorifying the activities, the pastimes, the form, the qualities of the Supreme Lord. That's his point. And it's true. I used to listen to the news on the radio some years ago, and it gives like a dead feeling in the heart. The words don't have life. They're words, and you read very fine poetry glorifying the things of this world, and the great novel, and it's actually dead. It doesn't have any true meaning, because it's just interactions of one dead thing and another dead thing. So if you interact dead things with each other, it's only dead things interacting. But those same words, when properly applied to the Supreme Lord with Tamasloka, then the most wonderful thing, and that's what the Bhagavatam is. Anyone like to comment on that? Because it's interesting points. Because the conditioned soul, even when we're aspiring to be devotees, a difficult circumstance, because our taste isn't really there completely, yet the taste, and we longing to taste sweetness, and we try to taste it in the material realm, and we just taste ashes, which aren't very sweet.
Sometimes interesting or glittering initially, and then it goes flat. There's no survival development of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when something strange happens, like with Tamil Nadu or a tsunami or something, you sort of grab your attention a bit. And after a while, you get tired of it. So,
and they're trying to squeeze more and more. But everything is like that. Yeah.
I find that because it's basically dead, therefore the emphasis becomes anticipation.
Yeah.
So you build something up.
Yeah.
But it's all before the event, because the actual event is far from very much.
Yeah.
Most of
the pleasure is in the anticipation.
Yeah, much and also in discussion and the rushes or the anticipation.
And also you can also get a little bit of pleasure of talking about it to your friends after. You know what I did, you know what I haven't, and maybe you can even evoke some envy in them too, and then you get a little taste of that.
Yeah.
And you can go around in your car. I mean, you get this big, big $13 million house, but all it is bedrooms and kitchens and stairs and bathrooms. And, it's the same old thing.
Yeah.
So, but at least the people who are walking by, when they look at it, they can say, "Oh, what a fortunate person must live in there." Mm-hmm. See, a little pleasure like that.
It
must be so great, huh?
The whole world is ashes. So, nothing to describe a book. No meaning. It took a couple of hours to decorate Suti Rani when she left him. Made her a gopi or something. I could not understand the meaning of all that. Even the living world is dead, but what happened?
She has to wear something.
Your brothers once and had cable TV on. Advertisement after advertisement, keep telling them what shows they're going to have next month. And what they're already watching is not good enough, but keep subscribing because next month we're going to have this, we're going to have that.
That's that sense of anticipation.
You know, you're not really enjoying what you have this month, but don't stop your subscription because next month we're going to have this.
And then, I mean, that's the whole field of advertising, is just giving you the hope against hope and all your experience to this date that, by this shopping, you're going to finally get something that's going to bring you satisfaction. It's all lies. It's a world of lies.
सबको हम रंग रूप आदर दे मानव का मानव को हम उत्सित चित्र बना दे सबका इट मीन्स
कैन यू अंडरस्टैंड दैट आई वाज आस्किंग यू टू सी
आई अंडरस्टैंड
इट आई डिड इट इन द हिंदी पार्ट
यस यस दैट वी डेकोरेट द डेड बॉडीज and give a lot of, honor and respect to that. But then they're alive, we make them dead. Alive, we don't care at all, they're just like dead, we leave them aside. And when they die, then we decorate them.
Yeah. Say, that same Supreme Lord, this again is his anticipation that he's going to actually see the source of satisfaction, Krishna. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvikas to delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion. He has created. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which bring auspiciousness to all. So here's this relationship to the demigods. He's describing that he's actually the Supreme Lord, and he's come to serve them. So even the Supreme Lord comes to serve, and he's created the laws, and they're enlivened by his appearance. There's no real comments here. The same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvikas to delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion. He has created, delighting them because they were having problems maintaining the principles of religion in his service because of the overburdened demonic forces in the world, so they become delighted when the Lord comes to Dharma Sanstapanartaya to reestablish the principles of religion that he himself has created and help them in their service. And residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song and which brings auspiciousness to all. They glorify him, and that is the greatest of auspiciousness for everyone to hear the glories of the Lord. And if we don't hear the glories of the Lord, we'll end up hearing other glories and become attracted to other glories, and that plants so many material desires in our consciousness. And that causes our death again and again. It all has to do with desires. So what we're trying to do is increase our desire by hearing to serve, increase our desire to serve Krishna. That's what we're trying to do. To to increase our desire, because everything rests on a desire. It's described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Just like the reflection of the tree rests upon water, our situation in the material world is based on our desire. It rests on our desire. It's a very heavy thought if you think about it. My situation rests on my desire. So now I'm getting the fruit of my desires. How do you like the taste? Well, it's not so good today, but tomorrow it'll be better. If I just can get one of these and get rid of this one problem and clear my credit card debt and fix my car, and then I can do this and that, and then everything's just going to be so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Point of desire is one of the salient features of Buddhism, creating desire.
What is our take on that? How do we view that?
Well, we also, Ichha Vivesh Samuttheno Dhamma Mohenabhai, our name is the same radically, that the more you desire, the more you sort of the cobweb you keep on weaving and getting entangled.
Buddhism has its roots, of course, in the Vedic culture.
But
it's not possible, obviously, to negate desire, because first thing you have to do is desire to not desire. So as soon as you stop desiring, desiring is born of the mode of passion. So you desire to not desire. I have such a strong desire not to desire. And that's what happens. And you end up fighting with yourself all the time.
Means if we understand the nature of desire,
yes,
then we'll be able to overcome it. It's an intellectual phenomenon at the same time.
Unless you desire something superior, how can it, but intelligence alone is not sufficient to remove the taint, because it's the soul that's desiring. It wants something. It's longing. So artificially, one can put oneself in a situation for a short time where one is not desiring by breathing, by just meditating. But as soon as something comes along, it can just knock you right out of that, because the soul itself is alive. It wants. So because we don't want to suffer, we pull ourselves back from desiring. But really, the only way that we can stop desiring on a lower level is to have the most incredible, powerful desires on the higher level. Param Dushvinivartate, that's Krishna's point. Vishavadivartate, Niradhasile, Namasovajam, Sopyasya, Param Dushvinivartate.
You can exert and maintain control through the head desires. No, you can't sustain it.
Thinking, feeling, willing. So the feeling is the bhokta. The thinking is the jñātva and kṛta. So which one out of those three is the strongest? Huh? All those who think thinking is not strong as raising hands. All those who wish thinking was the strongest raising hands. But it's feeling. We get driven by our feelings more than anything. This is so many different. The Stoic philosophers in ancient Greece, they were trying to remove all feelings from a man, and just we can just be rational. Man is rational, completely rational. He only does what's right until India beats, until Pakistan beats Indian cricket, and then all hell breaks loose.
I don't know what man would do.
See, because we have the subtle, there's the subtle body. At the bottom of that is this thing called the I refer to it as subconscious. It's like the bag of all the impressions, some skills you've had for thousands and thousands and thousands of births, and our thinking is on one level, and this pragya, which is what does that mean? I'm about finished too then. But we have all this subconscious stuff that drives us. You don't even know about, you know, it's pushing you and pushing you and pushing you and pushing you, thinking you're rational, but actually all these subconscious longings and pushings are there that are impressions from so many previous lives. We're puppets to these things. That's a whole other interesting topic. Okay. That's why, you know, you're meditating, and you say, from now on, I'm going to really, you know, listen to all my rounds, and I'm going to not miss hearing anything. I'm just going to meditate, or I'm going to only do this. And then just some desire pops up from somewhere or another, and then boom, all your thinking is finished. Even for powerful yogis, what to speak of. So we have a different process. That's the thinking process. And Krishna consciousness is also so much. There's the physical things to do, there's the thinking things to do, and there's also the feeling things to do. Mm. So we're supposed to see the deities and feel something too. Mm. Bhakti means the offering of the bhakta, is offering bhakti. This is about our own internal energy. Devotion, and that's what Krishna is tasting, the devotion.
Good night.